Hello.
How we doing, Ian?
Good. Back on the air.
It's good to be back, as always.
Yeah. I want to start out the show one more time with our friends over at Laracast. Just a quick shout out. Let me just share my screen here. See his beautiful Laracast website. Thanks so much to Laracast, Jeffrey Way, for sponsoring the show. The first ones to sponsor the show. Just means so much to us to have that support from the community. And obviously Laracast, just the premier resource to learn about Laravel and web development in general, honestly. So check that out. Thanks so much to Jeffrey for believing in us and sponsoring the show. Please check out Laracast. Obviously Aaron and I, big fans since way back, day one for me, and I'm sure very early for Aaron. Yeah. So
keep talking. I want to look up when I first subscribed to Laracast. Let's see.
Way back.
It's got to be like 2014 or something.
Yeah, that's pretty close to the beginning then.
Let's see how far back Gmail goes. Welcome to Laracasts on 7/2 of 2014.
Wow, there you go.
There you go.
So two long timers here. We've been paying ever since. Now we moved to Lifetime, but get in there, buy that Lifetime subscription. Thanks so much to Laracast. So,
man, my 10-year anniversary of being a Laracast subscriber is coming up. That's wild. That's so crazy long.
And what are you,
35?
So like, yeah. You know, it's just under a third of your life. Like,
that is crazy.
It's wild.
I can tell that I'm looking at this email and I can tell, like, I know the template. Like the Laravel email template that was used back then. That's
from
funny.
That era. Yeah.
Yeah. Side note about Laracasts, they're hiring a video editor slash producer. So if you're a video editor slash producer and want a super flexible job with good benefits and stuff like that, check out Laracasts, because at the very top of the website right now, there's a banner that says we're hiring. So it's a great place to work.
And Jeffrey tweeted something we've talked about on the show, which is that like 90% of the people are not following the like very straightforward rules for applying. So you have a very good shot.
You've got a shot, man. Read the instructions. I think he said 10 people have applied and 2 have followed the directions.
Yeah.
Not even to say if they're good or like if the applications are good. It's just that they followed the directions.
I mean, right there. You're in the top 20% just by following directions, even if you have like no experience. You're already ahead of people with experience. So
yeah, so if you want to become a video editor, just follow the directions and hey, who knows, we'll see.
Crazy. I have some 2014 Laravel stuff to talk about too, but maybe we'll do that in a little bit.
Okay.
All right, we have a little follow-up. Is this the year of Linux finally? That's what Mike Kelly wants to know. Year of Linux. DHH is switching to Linux. Nobody else is switching to Linux. Off on his island.
It's the year of Linux and the year of one-time payment for software.
He actually had a picture the other day of like...
I saw that.
Yeah, where he's like trying to find the perfect Linux laptop. He's just like desperately attempting not to go back to the Mac. He's like, I'm just going to buy every laptop until I figure out one.
Yeah, he had a bunch of computers and a bunch of like Thunderbolt adapters or docks. And he's like, I'm just trying to figure out which one will work with, you know, my monitor to give me full resolution. And I'm like, bro, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
It is not worth it. Go drive one of your 50 sports cars. And
gotta be
just
some better use for those hundreds of millions of dollars.
Real. Like,
you can do something with your time there.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go Linux desktop and you've got $100 million, just pay Linus to come and figure it out for you. Like, come on, man.
Or maybe you need some kind of custom hacked Mac laptop or something, whether they've done some optimizations. I don't know.
This goes back to the, like, I think a long time ago, I said something like, my goal is not to be a good developer. Like, my goal is to make money and, you know, live my life and be happy. This is the exact same thing. Like, there's a 0.0% chance I'm ever going to run Linux on the desktop because my Mac just works. I'm like, I don't care. I got other stuff to do. which is not to fault people who want to tinker and like that's their hobby, but that's just not my hobby.
Yep.
And I'm not going to do it. So more power to him.
This is what we're going to let's touch on this quick because related to what you just said, like I've had a little change in my world, which is exactly related to that, which is
okay.
Things that make you money and mm-hmm. what you're in business for. And it's like, so as I, you know, I haven't talked a ton on here, but I kind of hinted that we've been experimenting with like a new mm-hmm. version of HubSpot that's rebuilt mm-hmm. from the ground up and all that stuff. It's off. It's on hiatus. We're putting that to the side. No more rebuilding.
No
more rebuilding. So you're not going to see any Postgres tweets from me or anything like that for a little while. Because it's just like I'm already months and months into it. And there's just it's such a huge project. It's very stressful.
Yeah.
No customers care about it. Literally not a single customer cares about it. And it's like, what am I doing? Like, why? So this is the third time in 20 years I've tried to do this and unsuccessfully rebuilt. But
okay. Well, hang on. We gotta dig in. You've been cagey about the
rebuild. I've been cagey because I knew there was a chance. I knew that, like, listen, this is a very hard thing. There's a reasonable chance it's not going to happen. So I haven't been like all in. We haven't talked to the customer. We're not like out to the customers being like, wait till the new version that's totally rebuilt. Right. Like, so yeah. So if you have questions,
okay, so back up.
Mm.
What was I guess in the past three times, what's the impetus for doing a full rebuild in the first place? And then we'll talk about why it failed.
Yeah. So I think that's a big reason why it fails, right? Is because there's no good reason. Like, I mean, Joel Spolsky laid this out a million years ago. Like,
right.
The reason is because I have a podcast about it. I'm friends with Taylor Otwell. Like, mm-hmm. I know all these great devs doing cool stuff. And it's awesome when you can just like drop in like some mm-hmm. new hotness and it's like auto magically works everywhere because you're on Laravel 11 on day one and like all that stuff, right? Okay. And it's more fun to some degree to build in that environment and things like that. That's like the only reason.
So FOMO. Like, the answer is FOMO.
Yeah, basically FOMO. It's like FOMO. And it's like every time it's the same thing. It's like, why am I doing this again? Like, it's going to be super stressful. Because the other thing is like, I'm also not really a believer if I'm going to rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
Like just to literally do the like rebuild it to be exactly the same way it is not that interesting to me either. Because that's just like the death march of like, literally try to find feature parity on every single thing and just sit there and copy everything, right? And like,
which you were doing a rebuild plus an expansion.
Yes, or at least a rethink. So it's like every feature is like a rethink. Like, okay, well, this is how we do it before. And so, for example, current HelpSpot and now continuing HelpSpot.
Only HelpSpot.
Customer information is stored on the ticket. So there's not like a table of customers. The customer information's with a ticket.
Yeah.
Which, so you think, okay, like that's an easy one. We're going to break that out. That's like the obvious modern way to do it. Have a table of customers, blah, blah, blah. So that's one of the first things I got done. But that actually like ripples through like everything in the whole system because there's actually like quite a few benefits to being on the ticket. Like in a help desk environment, like just one of them is that whatever the person's information was when they submitted the ticket, stays that way forever on the ticket. So like you have a custom field, right? Like, so like 5 years from now, they email you again, but they're on a different plan or they have a different name because they got married or whatever. And now like, so if you update the customer record, what do you do with the old thing? Because now you're going to change your reports and all this stuff. So do you have like a denormalized thing on the ticket? Blah, blah, blah. So there's like, there's different trade-offs and solutions.
That makes sense.
But there's a lot to think about. Every single thing you touch is a lot to think about. Obviously, this is like straight from Spolsky now, but like all the millions of little bug fixes slash edge cases slash subtleties that are baked in there now, right? It's like, obviously all those just get abandoned to some degree. I mean, you're going to go back through and try to map them and blah, 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 but now everything's different. So if you've rethought a feature, that little subtlety that might not even apply. So this is kind of all back to like my, like when we started the podcast and I was ejecting things. I'm kind of, I'm kind of back in that mode a bit of like, this is a lot of stress. This is a lot of headache. This is literally not going to make me any money. And to do it for that, I mean, HelpSpot's already on Laravel. We can continue to like swap out components for newer things and refactor some stuff. There's definitely some technical debt stuff I want to like clean up. But yeah. So there's a little bomb drop for you.
Yeah, that's huge. So first of all, I hope Daniel Colborn isn't listening because this sounds like a perfect use case for event sourcing. And I just, you know, I hate to give that.
That's
I hate
to give him the answer here.
Event sourcing. Easy layup, you know, I hate that for him. Okay, so now that Daniel's not listening, that is a big move. How does it feel? Do you feel like a huge sense of relief or is it like?
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely
what are you
going to
do now? What are you going to do with your time?
Because there's so, see, that's the other thing. What's sort of, there's also been this sort of change in the world, which has come in a weird time where like, we kind of started talking about this and like, I started chipping away at it and just, I spent a lot of time just like poking around. Like I went down the React angle and I looked at different things. Like that was just like seeing what's out there. Cause I haven't been out there in a long time. Right. So like, let's see what's out there and whatever. But then you kind of have the rise of all this AI stuff and that has its own pressures. Cause it's like, well, customers are asking for that. That's something that customers do want is what can AI do for me? Right. And so it's like, okay, well, if we wait till we're done with this rebuild, then that's like a year from now. And then yes, maybe like we can integrate more deeply some AI stuff, but at the same time, that's not really that true. Like ultimately we can add AI to the current HelpSpot. It's not like that's impossible in any way. So now we're just even pushing out some of those. And HelpSpot does have some AI stuff in it already, but we haven't gone to the more kind of sophisticated stuff that, you know, I think would be good, like auto categorization and auto assignment and like, you know, obviously auto replying potentially and things like that. So, you know, that's pushing all that a year out, let's say, or whatever it ends up being. Putting all the so just even on AI, it's like now we can start on that stuff like right away and we can ship something in a month or two that's got useful AI features for people versus like being way out there. And then the other thing is, since we were rethinking it, it's like that's a huge migration for the current customers too. So it's like, okay, there's all new system, the data model is going to be different. How are we going to even move everybody? A lot of it might not even be able to be automated. So we're going to have to like kind of be hand-holding hundreds and hundreds of customers through this process. So then that also for a small team becomes, you know, all we do for however many months after the new version's out. So it just ends up being like 2 years, 3 years of like, maybe it gets out, but it's going to be pretty static after that because we're going to have like all these customers who need help moving. Also, when you have customers, when you make them move on that level, you know, they're going to be rethinking their options. They're going to be like, huh, well, if I have to like do a bunch of manual labor to move into this new help spot, like, maybe I should look at what else is out there. And then, so then you're potentially losing customers who wouldn't have otherwise left. So there's a lot of stuff like that, businessy ends up too. But yeah, so I don't know, with the AI stuff and all that, it's like, you know what? It's going to be so nice that we can just like start shipping features people want rather than the underlying architecture stuff that nobody cares about and is, you know, fine. It's not how I would draw it up today, but it's not horrific by any means. And so
crazy.
Yeah. So there we go.
Okay. Wow. That's too bad. I mean, I guess that's good, but that's too bad.
It is. It's like, it is too bad.
It's good content.
Like, it is good content, right? That's why I'm going to bust it out here. Yeah. I don't know. It's like one of those things where it's like, is it too bad or is it just that I was stupid to begin with? You know, it's like kind of like every...
No. You were smart then, you're smart now. And it's never our fault, that's for sure.
It's so funny because like every couple years, basically, it's like when you work on the same product for 20 years almost, it's like I have these little side adventures where like I build Thermostat, which is the MPS tool, or I build some other thing, or like I go off on a new HelpSpot version. And none of them ever work out. And it's like, it's kind of, this is always an interesting thing to me because it's like, you don't ever know, you know, you think you have one successful product and people are like, there's an assumption that there's more successful products in you, but that's a bad assumption. Like you might've had one good idea and that's it. And you should just really take care of that idea. If you're out there with the one good idea, don't get distracted by the other ideas. That's very hard, especially when you work on it for a very long time.
Very hard. 20 years. That's twice as long as I've been subscribed to Laracast. That's a long time.
My longest job before that, I think, was like 2.5 years or something. Yeah. Like, was the longest I was ever at a job. So, like, I just, there was some guy, some tweet going around the other day about, like, some guy, you know, he's got, like, 10 products. And, like, one of them is $75,000 a month or whatever it was, or a year, whatever it was. But all the other ones were $1,000.
Yeah.
Was it a month?
Yeah.
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 And all the other ones are $1,000. And it's like, dude, just get rid of those other ones. Forget the other ones. Like, you've got the one that works. Just keep
selling that one. All right, let's go into this. Let's do this. Let's go. So that guy, Mark, I think.
Yeah, it sounds
I think it's a French name.
I didn't know who he was.
M-A-R-C, Indie Hacker Fellow. Mm-hmm. So the tweet was making the rounds, and everybody's, you know, picking up their points of view on single projects, multiple projects, which...
Right.
We gotta have something else to talk about on Twitter, first of all. Like, can we just move on?
Yeah.
Can we just move on from that conversation? But we're gonna have that conversation here.
We gotta have it here.
We're gonna have it here. Everyone else's takes are tired, ours are hot. Yeah. Okay. So his project portfolio is, you know, he's got these 10 different projects. They're all making, like you said, you know, $1,000 a month. Except for the one that's making $75,000 a month. And the one that's making $75,000 a month is a starter kit on how to start other projects.
Okay.
And so he's basically selling, you know, Laravel Jetstream, for example, but, you know, different ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like he has to keep starting these other projects to show that his starter kit is really good. And so he's kind of hoisted by his own petard here. He can't just focus on one, because then he loses the magic of the one as it is. So it's kind of
true, though. Maybe it's bad that it shows that, like, the starter kit doesn't have that much to do with, like, if you're actually going to be successful. Like,
that is the most logical conclusion you could draw from it. And nobody is drawing that conclusion.
Nobody is drawing that conclusion.
No, of course not. They're looking at it.
That's funny.
And thinking, oh, I can start 10 SaaSes because I'm going to use this starter kit. So that was, I saw that making the rounds, and I think Rob Walling quote tweeted it. I don't know if Jason Cohen got in on it or not, but I saw a lot of the people that, you know, have the drum to beat on multiple versus single projects. So
I think Jason Cohen had some kind of tweet about that too, about multiple projects or something, but maybe it was based on that one. But so the multiple projects, very hard. You probably don't have more than one good idea in you. Let's just be honest out there. And sometimes people do, but it's hard. Hard to have more than one great idea. Even Laravel, like, you know, Forge is a big percentage of their revenue. Like, I'm not gonna bust it all out here, but, like, you know, it's the biggest one, and that's the first one. And so there are other things that they do, and they make a lot of money relative. But yeah, it's hard. Hard to have a bunch of good ideas that all are successful. Like, just
gosh, it's hard to have one good idea that's successful.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you get one, you gotta be happy with that. So
yeah, for real. But it is a founder privilege to be able to go on side quests.
It is. And it is, there is, like, a necessity to that to some degree, I think, because, like, you just need to cleanse your brain a little bit sometimes, or you need to see what's going on, kind of peeking your head up above the water a little bit. But I do think this is a huge, like, software developers founder faux pas for sure. Is, like, I mean, what I should be poking my head up to do is marketing stuff, like the website needs updating, like, all whatever, like, dig into the analytics on, see what's going on. Like,
I'm bored already,
I'm gonna poke my head up and, like, build something, because, like, that's what I wanted to do when I started the business, was build stuff. And but yeah, it's like, at the end of the day, just not the best use of your time is the reality of it. And, like, or the stuff you can be building should be stuff that you're going to be able to ship more quickly and make your customers more happy versus making yourself happy, which, you know, is fine. It depends a little bit on, if you're DHH and you want to, like, pretend self-hosted software is, like, the future, and, like, you want to just do it because, like, you've been bored for a couple years.
Subtle and devastating. I love it. If you want to pretend.
Like, create a little drama and have a little action, like, great, like, that's fine. But then if you're like me and you're like, whoa, my, like, oldest kid's going to college, like, there's two more behind him going to college, and, like, do I like money or do I like playing around with programming? And it's like, well, I like playing around with programming, but I also like money, and money
also
do important.
Like money.
So it's like, maybe, like, taking a year or more and, like, side questing is not going to be optimal on the money front. So I mean, the nice thing about our product is that people tend to stay with it. So it's like, it's afforded me some of that. That's where it is interesting. Like people pick products, like products that are not easily dismissed out of your ecosystem or out of your company are nice, because it's like, that does afford you, you know, usually lower churn and things like that. I've been seeing this a lot on Twitter too, people going back and forth on this, but I do think like, it is very tempting to think like, well, you can have like set or forget it products or product one-time use products and stuff like that. But it's so hard to keep those going. Whereas like something that people use all day, every day, while it is harder to make those sales, like once you make that sale, it also stays in those companies for a long time. So that is very beneficial. If you're get distracted every couple of years. So,
but you have successful side quests. You've got Lara Jobs and you've got Laracon Online.
That's true. Those are kind of different. And those are still like a very small fraction.
Minuscule,
of the
yeah.
Successful. I wouldn't say minuscule, but they're Laracon Online.
I didn't mean to say like, minuscule. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Like a passion project. And then and Lara Jobs is bigger than that, but it's still very small compared to HelpSpot. So, but they are successful. And like, but that is also a product that's like, even that, like, I feel like I don't do a great job with that, because it's like that could use more love, more, whether it's like just marketing on the marketing front, like entirely on the marketing front, like even sales wise, like we should probably have somebody doing sales and who's like calling into these big companies that use Laravel and aren't on Twitter, right? But mostly we focus on like Twitter and things like that. So even that is, you know, when you're small, it's just like you think you want to do more stuff than you can actually do, but you can, it's hard to do more than one or two things at a time. So, but you know, you're in there, you're in the mix on the multiple products here. So you know how
doing it all at once. Yep.
But in the beginning too, it's also a little different. Like you're kind of striking out in a few different avenues. Consulting plus products is also a little different. But anyway, so there we go. That was quite the feedback that got kicked us off on a crazy.
Yeah, so you're Linux desktop. Who knows, man?
I'm not doing that.
You're good wrap up to the segment there. Yeah. There's your answer, Mike Kelly.
This episode is brought to you by Buttondown. That's buttondown.email, email software for nerds like you. Whether you're starting a SaaS, growing your agency, or maybe building out a screencasting empire, you know you should be collecting email addresses of friends, internet randos, potential users, and anyone who you think might be interested in what you can tell them down the line. There are hundreds of email marketing software services out there that all pretty much offer the same thing. Collect and clean addresses, send out broadcasts or drip campaigns, get analytics so you can see what's resonating and what's not. Buttondown makes it really easy for you to integrate instead of having to spend all day figuring out CAPTCHAs and iframes. You can hook up your site or app to Buttondown with just a form endpoint or simple REST call. Write emails in Markdown instead of futzing around in bloated 2008-era WYSIWYG editors, and then get on with your actual work you're supposed to do. New customers can save 50% off their first year with Buttondown using the coupon code DIETCOKE, all one word. And if you email support, we'll give White Glove migration to your existing subscribers and archives for free. Thank you so much to Buttondown. That's an incredible offer. Make sure you check them out to get 50% off your first year using the coupon code DIETCOKE, and also make sure to take advantage of that White Glove migration service. Thanks again to Buttondown for sponsoring Mostly Technical. Oh, geez. All right. So this will be good segue into your stuff, because we have one more feedback item from Cameron Scott. So he wants to know, when choosing a course topic, how much do you factor if there's already other courses out there? So what are your thoughts on that?
I factor that very little, frankly.
Right.
I think that people learn in different ways, but also people teach in different ways. And I think if I don't have an angle, if I don't have like a point of view, then I'm just not, I don't really have anything to say on it. And so there can be a course on, you know, how to record video, and I can still make a course on screencasting because I have a point of view, and my point of view is like, you can do this. There are ways to do it that are easy. There are ways to like make your life not miserable while you're editing. Like, I believe in you. And so that's kind of my point of view in that case, or like my workflow. But if, you know, we're talking about this Laravel course, there's going to be Laravel courses on, you know, performance. And I still think I have a different experience and I can teach different things. So I wouldn't go head to head with like Adam Wathen on TDD back in the day. But beyond that, I don't really consider it too much, which I don't, you know, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's worked out fine so far.
I mean, I've always had the same philosophy or like a variation on it with like products too. It's like, if there's no products that do this thing, then there's probably not much of a market. I mean, everybody's out there on the internet now. Everybody sees what's out there. Like, if nobody has thought of this idea, it's probably not a great idea. I mean, obviously there are exceptions and sometimes you just are the first, but a lot of the time that's not going to be true. And even in courses, like even in the heyday of Adam Wathen TDD, like, are you going to sell as much as Adam Wathen? Probably not, because he has like a bigger audience than you, but maybe, but it's also in the air and that creates its own juice that like, maybe if you did do a TDD course that had some, again, like, I don't think you can just copy his course, right? You have your own take on how to do it, or you're doing it with PEST instead of PHP Unit or whatever, like variation, then that might be something. While people are out there thinking about it and just are going through buying courses on TDD, I've definitely done stuff like that where I'm like, I buy two courses because I'm in that mindset and like, whatever, I'm going to look at both these or multiple books, right? I mean, back in the day, I did that all the time. Like, I got 7 JavaScript books here. And
I still do that all, to this day. Right? Yeah, I just buy all the books. Yeah, that's interesting. You could actually look at successful courses that are out there and think, do I have a different point of view on this? And you can kind of ride, in their wake a little bit. That's interesting. Yeah.
Even, and that's sort of interesting too. Like, what books are out there? Like, can you reverse course from books? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, yes,
you do know what I'm saying. there's all these SQLite books.
Turns out, like, you can. Yeah. You absolutely can. You can buy 8 books on MySQL and read them all because no one else has ever read these books before in the history. Right. Only the author and the editor have ever read these books. Right. And so you can read the books and turn it into a video course and people will think you're a genius. Yeah. It's not that complicated. It's crazy. And then you tweet about it and people think you're an idiot. And it's like, great. I will continue to be successful.
And that, I mean, and there is a validation in that, and the idea of like, these publishing houses thought that there was a sufficient market to sell these books, and those are like, with all this extra cost of a physical,
that's what I'm saying,
you know, publication and shipping and all this stuff, like actual and overhead,
an editor, and right? Like they do the whole thing, right, they're spending and then $1 million to ship this book,
right?
crazy.
Yeah, interesting.
I think that's a completely viable way to make a really great course is you just do the research. I think there's this false notion that like you have to inherently know everything to be able to do a course. I think you have to have some experience. Right. I wouldn't go pick up a book on Ruby and try to teach a Ruby course, but you can go pick up a whole bunch of books that have been well researched, have been technically edited, so some technical editor has said this is correct. You can read them all and pull out the interesting parts, apply your point of view, and make a course. And and you can win. It's not that complicated.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah, people on Twitter think I'm insane for reading books.
Giving out the secrets.
I know. It's like, come on. I can give out secrets all day long and people will still be like, hey man, how does this work? I'm like, well, I kind of just told you.
Yeah. That, and you know, the idea, right, is only 5% or whatever. It's like,
yes,
you got to do the work. You got to read the books. You got to distill the information.
Actually read the books, organize the information, turn on the camera. Like, the hard part still remains, but at least you have a corpus of knowledge from which you can draw.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty awesome.
And I think like the unique and sort of skill aspect where that might really separate people is like, yes, I mean, there's A, just doing the work, which a lot of people just fall off before that part of it. But then B, like, you know, your taste in what nuggets to pull out, how to organize it, like what's really important versus like, we're not trying to just reproduce the manual here. Correct. So like, what are the relevant bits that an active software developer actually needs versus, you know, yeah, just pure documentation and things like that.
This is literally what I did for the MySQL course. Like, yeah. There's no extra secret sauce. I bought, you know, these books right behind me on camera. They make great art now. I bought them and I read them and I pulled out the parts that were applicable to a software developer. And I ignored the parts that were applicable to DBAs. And I put my taste and my point of view on it. And I made a course, and it was the greatest thing that Planet Scale has ever seen. It's like,
yeah,
it was hard. It was hard. It took me a lot of time, but it wasn't as hard as I think people think it was.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, buy books. They're still useful.
So what's going on with your, I think you've announced the course you're doing, I believe, or no?
I don't know. We're about to find out. Yeah.
You've hinted, I guess.
So Dave, don't clip this part. Sometimes I say, Dave, don't clip this part. And it's like a little, you know, it's a bit, it's a tongue in cheek. It's like, actually, Dave, you should clip this part because it's going to be hysterical. This is a real one. So Dave, don't clip this part. So this will be for our many, many, many listeners only. We're doing the SQLite course first. This is an exclusive. You're hearing it here. Ian has stopped working on his rewrite. Aaron is working on a SQLite course. We're breaking news today.
Yes, we are.
So yeah, we're working on the SQLite course first, and we have secured a sponsor for the course.
Ooh,
very excited about that. We will also be selling the course. So the sponsor does not preclude us from selling the course. So it'll be a traditional, you can buy this course and watch it. And so we're starting with that. So I've started studying and reading. I bought one of these books and I looked up the author. Turns out he's in Fort Worth, which I'm in Dallas. You know, they're 30, 45 minutes apart. I sent him an email. I was like, hey, do you want to get lunch? And he responded and said, sure, let's go to lunch. So I'm going there to lunch with one of the authors of these books. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. Books. It's wild.
Who knew? Books.
Who knew? You can just do things. You can just look people up on LinkedIn and see like, oh, this guy's in Fort Worth. What if I emailed him? And it can just work. So yeah, we've started on that. I've started, you know, started the early rumblings of marketing by tweeting that I'm working on it. A little hint.
That you're reading books.
Exactly. And so we'll start to get that machine rolling a little bit. And then, yeah, we're going to launch that. Not long. I'm not going to commit to a date now, but it won't be terribly long from now. Mm. So Steve is working on some of the site while I work on this research, and we've got a few goodies, I think, in store. And this is really like this is our first big offering to the world as a duo, and so we're going above and beyond, I think, because this is like, look what we can do. Don't you want to give us gobs of money? So hopefully it works out. But yeah, we're doing it. SQLite, it's coming up.
So I love this idea of the sponsor. I mean, this is like something where like your street cred has earned you an advantage that other people won't have. Like, so everybody knows you guys produce good stuff, and it's like, hey, like we're gonna pay you just to produce this thing. We're not even gonna get, you know, any revenue from it, and we just want it to exist. Obviously, I mean, like their motives are fairly straightforward, I would think. Of like, SQLite is new and popular. Let's get more information out there. Let's help it keep growing. If SQLite grows, it's good for the sponsor. Presumably, I'm assuming they're in the SQLite space in some capacity, and so. That's great for you because it's like not just like, yeah, well, it's this X dollars and we're just producing this course and then we leave.
It's over.
It's
like
no, or it's theirs even, which is a situation you've experienced now.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you can do it. Who knows in the future? Like obviously you're going to sell the course now, but maybe there's other ways you can do other things with it in the future, or it gets bundled up into some package, or who knows. But you own the rights to it, so you can yep. do what you want with it.
We own the rights. It's going to be on our domain, not TryHard Studios. We're spinning up a separate, you know, kind of brand for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we own the videos and everything. And the hope for the sponsor is that when people are learning about SQLite, they are also being exposed to this sponsor. And so when they decide, like, oh yeah, SQLite is right for me, I'm going to go use that, you know, service that was talked about in the course or is shown on the, you know, the surrounding page of that course. So yeah, it's really nice for us because it's a down payment. I mean, we right. now have money in the bank, and so we can afford to spend a month just working on this course without really worrying about, you know, how are we going to eat?
Right.
So that's a pretty nice, I don't know that that's like universally viable. You know, I think this is a kind of a unique situation because I just came out of a database company and I'm doing a database course and I've got this like this following in this world. And so it did kind of conspire to work just right. But yeah, it's really interesting. And I don't know of another course that's done this where it's like, yeah, you're going to pay for the course, but also there's a sponsor. So yeah. I think it's kind of cool. And we actually have another one on the hook. So after this SQLite one, we'll do another one.
Ooh.
This might be a model that we could do over and over again. I think eventually we'll run out of topics that I can convincingly teach on, but not for a while. Yeah. I mean, there are several databases. There's also data modeling, which I think is a huge, huge hairy quagmire of content and could be done really well. So yeah, I think it could work, and I'm pretty excited about it.
I mean, yeah, I think this is a underutilized really element of sort of various sorts of like software platforms or systems. Like, I think that this is a pretty effective use of marketing dollars to do something like this. Because it's not just going to be the course, right? Like, you're going to have clips and you're going to have free stuff on YouTube, and like their brand is going to get out there in other ways in addition to just the literally people who buy the course. But also people who literally buy the course are the kind of people who are more likely to spend money to begin with. So that's all really good. And the amount of money you spend on something like this, while it might seem significant if we like set the number, I'm sure, to some people, it's not really that significant in the size of like a VC backed company or a public company or whatever.
Compared to a single full-time employee.
Right. It's less than an employee. It's like, or Google ads or whatever else the case, you know, other ways you might spend that money. So and getting in with influencers is a whole thing that is common in other industries. And I think there is some of it in our world, but not maybe as much as there should be, considering like so many more people are making videos and doing things like that these days. There's probably more opportunity there for reasonable rates than people might assume. So
yeah, and it works out great because everyone's incentives are aligned. Like, yeah, we have this just hysterical minimal contract saying like what I'm gonna do for them, and it's like I mean, I'm never gonna look at that contract again, but I am incentivized to talk about this course all the time because I'm trying to sell it. And so you know, the sponsor's like, you know, you agree to, you know, tweet this many times, and I'm like, bro, it's gonna be a lot more than that.
Like, hang on.
Yeah, like I'm gonna be talking about this a whole bunch. This is kind of my livelihood now. And so it works out super great. And I honestly think if they had paid, you know, 10 times as much, I may even be less incentivized to do that. Because right now the big carrot is in front of me. Right. I haven't received what I hope to be the bulk of the money. I've received a solid down payment that buys me freedom for a little while, but I'm really hoping that the carrot is still in front of me. And so I'm pushing super hard, and they're just thrilled to death about that. So I think it works out. I think it works out really nicely.
Yeah. And then they're obviously going to expose it to their customers. So that should hopefully gain you some initial sales traction there on top of your own. You know, it's a different angle of people you might not already be reaching that you're going to be able to reach for the course. So yeah, that's great. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. We're breaking news. I love this.
Yeah. SQLite we're breaking course. News.
I mean, SQLite's definitely in the air.
Yeah.
Nuno is just posting about you should only use SQLite for caching for everything to start, you know, your new products and like, so yeah. So I think it's a very,
I think DHH uses it for once because it's so easily distributable. Yep.
He just tweeted that too, I think recently about using it. So yeah, it is easily distributable. I mean, there is like some huge advantages to it, and definitely the, I don't know if you're going to get into this, but there are some cool like other products that like, well, I mean, there's obviously whoever the sponsor is. I don't know who that is. But then there's also like, there's just a couple companies out there doing interesting stuff. Like there's like Lightstream, I think it's called. Lightstream. It's not even a company. It's an open source thing that's just for backing up your SQLite databases so you can or you know, have them be more sort of production friendly. There's even crazy stuff like, have you seen, what company is that? It's like one of the like, accounting software companies or something. Like they start on
language.
SQLite. Yeah. They started on SQLite. Man, I'm so annoyed. I can't remember who this is, but, they built some, like everything on top of SQLite, like way like 10 years ago. And like they, all this custom stuff that like, distributes it so that you it's like multi-master and stuff like that across different servers, but they built all this stuff way ahead of everybody else, so they've been big SQLite people also. Think of the name, man, that's annoying, I can't remember, but
Let's see, Zero Wave, Less Accounting, QuickBooks Online, probably not, those are all the ones
let me see if I can figure it out.
SQLite accounting. I can't even think of other bookkeeping accounting softwares.
Man, this is going to be annoying.
Well, they also
have like
listener,
a little like name for it too. Like, they have some open source thing that I feel like nobody actually uses.
Classic open source.
Yeah.
Dear listener, if you know who we're talking about, send us some feedback.
Yeah, put it down below, right? Put it down below.
Yeah, like, comment, and subscribe.
Comment, subscribe, all those things. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to be able to find it.
Yeah, we'll find it later. Yeah. It's bad radio.
All right. Yeah, terrible radio. Listening to me type's not fun.
Yeah, listen to you Google things. so on that note, I think the TryHard Studios offerings to the market are evolving. So, you know, we're out there trying to figure out what the market wants, because people want to work with us. That much we know. We got a ton of inbound, huge number of calls that we've taken, and we're trying to figure out, like, one, what do we want to do? Two, what do other people want us to do? And so I think, you know, originally we started with this notion of like, we'll come alongside your existing dev ed team and make them more powerful. Turns out nobody really wants that. Nobody wants that. Everybody on these dev ed teams are too busy. They're overworked. They don't have time to do video at all. And if they do have time to do video, the thing they want from us is to just, they want us to do video for them as well. And so, you know, we go in and we're like, hey, we'll help, you know, we'll do consulting and help it make it effective. And people are like, yeah, can you just make videos for us?
Right.
It's like, no, not really. Right. I mean, we don't want to do that. Yeah, it's a lot of work. We don't want to do that. I'm not knowledgeable on everything, and I don't want to pretend to be.
Yeah.
And so I think where we've settled is that type of consulting is not really, it's not really viable. And so we have stopped offering it, and we've stopped trying to convince people to do it. And one of these things, like, I have this blog post brewing in my brain, and the title is "You Can Fight or You Can Win." And it's a great title. It's a great title.
That's a good title. I love it.
And the notion here is that, like, certain things exist and are true, and you can try to change the world, or you can just, like, knowing that those things are true, you can try to just win based on the rules of the game, right?
Right.
And so all the time I see people doing stupid things, doing things that I think are stupid.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I'm, you know, this job interview is requiring me to do a 1 hour take home project. And I'm, you know, I'm standing up for my right of no free work. And I'm like, that's great. Do you want the job? Like, you can change the world. I am happy for you to try to champion this banner of no free work. You can do that, or you can just do the freaking project and try to get the job. Yeah. And so, you know, you can fight the system or you can just win. And oftentimes I prefer to just win. Sometimes you have to fight because the system is truly broken, but oftentimes it's just like, I don't care. I don't care enough. I want to win and I want to go home. So as we're talking to all these people, it's like, no, what we're offering is really valuable. And they're like, yeah, we don't want it. And I've realized that I don't want to fight that fight. I don't want to be the person that changes DevRel in, I don't care. I simply don't care enough to like change it.
I don't want to change the industry.
Like, I don't have enough energy. And
there,
so
there are also some weird incentives for people with actually people on video already. Like, those people are not necessarily inclined to come out to you and say, help us, because like,
yeah,
that's totally like, that's me saying I'm terrible at this job.
Right.
Like, I need you guys to spend more money to help me get better at this job.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, whatever. Different levels of management might be aware of that and be like, yes, let's help you. Other people might not want to go to their management and ask for that. So yeah, there are some weird stuff like that too.
Yeah. And so instead of fighting the system, we've just decided we want to win. And so we're not going to offer that. We're not going to try to convince people that this is a good idea and that we can actually help you. And so I think our offering now has morphed into, we will do a bespoke course for you. And that can be this type of like sponsorship model that we've talked about. That can also be, you tell us what kind of course you want, and we will go out and find the talent. We will we will help with the content outline, the structure, the recording, the packaging, the producing, everything. We will help you do that. Like, we will actually, we will do that on your behalf.
You're right.
It's going to cost a lot of money, but you're going to end up with this.
We're going to add some zeros there. I love it.
Yeah, we're gonna add two zeros, and you're going to end up with this beautifully produced course that you own forever.
Yep.
And the talent gets paid a certain amount and they relinquish their rights. And then the company gets to own this course forever. And the things that you don't have to do as a company is find the person who's going to be good on camera, make them produce it. Cause like, if, you know, let's get Jeffrey Way on the horn. If you ever have someone produce a course, you know what happens? They're late. They miss their deadlines every single time. You email them and they're like, oh no, I just got it. You know, I'm working on it. And you're like, you're not working on it. And then we will do like the editing and the polishing and the fine tuning and everything like that.
Yep.
So that's our contact us for pricing model. And the other thing, the down market model, is just you sponsor our YouTube channel. And so if you want to get out in front of other developers, great. We have a developer YouTube channel. You can pay us US dollars and we will say your name. It's like, well, that's been done before. That's easy. Right,
that's straightforward. Everybody gets that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I definitely think in terms of getting money out of the pockets, like I like both these, because obviously the just influencer advertising, great, got that. Everybody knows that. And the other one is like, the other thing before, like, we're trying to make you into this ongoing, forever you're going to have this video production. Like, either they don't have that ability, they don't want that ability. It is a very hard thing to pull off over a long period of time. Whereas like, we're going to go in, you're going to spend a lot of money now, but we're going to build this chunky piece of content that then you can use for years, and you can have newsletter signups, and you can have conversion things, and you can have landing pages that get people's contact detail and whatever. Like, people already know how to use that too. It's like, you probably already have an ebook that you do this with. Now do it with our video course instead, and like all that kind of stuff. So I like that.
So if you're interested, not you specifically, Ian, although you specifically, if one is interested, do reach out to Aaron at tryhardstudios.com. This is going to blow your mind. We probably won't be able to start on anything new until around September or October.
Oh.
Yeah. So
crazy.
Not so bad. Yeah.
So what's in the queue here? Is it a couple courses? You think that's the main thing, or you have other stuff in the queue too?
Yeah, we've got this SQLite course we're working on, followed quickly by a second similar course. This is listeners only too. It's going to be Postgres, obviously. We're doing Postgres next.
I love it.
Duh.
Duh.
Then We are also working on this model that I just described. We're working on this model for a company. So someone has already agreed in principle to this idea of, we'll give you a chunk of money and I want you to throw over the wall a series of videos and like go awesome. Figure it out. And this company has said that the content can be anything too. Like go find a good, talented educator, and whatever they want to teach, they can teach, and it will be good for our brand. And they're going to, you know, they're going to host it on their site. So like right. my face won't be on it at all, but we'll throw our marketing weight behind it. And so we've got two courses plus an outsourced course. Plus we're ramping up our production of the developer YouTube channel. So it is, I'll say for shorthand, my YouTube channel, but it is a company owned property now. So Steve and I will work on that together, but ramping up videos for my YouTube channel. And then where we can, you know, if there's time to slot anything in, it will be screencasting relaunch. That was originally going to be first. Like we were going to,
right, I remember
we
you were gonna, saying that. Yeah.
yeah. And then, you know, this money came in and yeah, it was like,
money.
We can put ourselves on the back burner and focus right. on this for now. And so that will always be there. And that's not a pressing need. It still makes sales and it's still high quality content. But the Empire expansion is going to wait probably for mid to late summer on that.
Yeah. Very cool. Lots going on. This is like the theme of the show is the, like, you can, what was your little tagline there of your blog post?
Oh, you can fight or you can win.
Yeah, you can fight or you can win. Like that's kind of the same with the plot, right? Like I could fight and like go through all this headache, or I can just win and make more money and sell the product people want.
Isn't that a great blog post title?
That is a great. You got to do that so I can reference.
Yeah, that's
it all
copyright
the time, yeah.
because I said it on air. That's how copyright that's works. So it's copyright it. Now. So no listener steal that. But do tell me if you like the idea, because that will make me write it. So yeah.
Yes. Get him to write it. Tweet at him.
Yeah. Tell me. I still need to write the Galaxy Quadrant Theory. I still need to write that up more properly. Yes. That's a great tagline.
A lot to
do. Love
a
Galaxy
a
Quadrant
do.
Theory. We love a theory. We'll have a name for anything,
love a
honestly.
Theory, yeah. Anything you can name is just...
Anything you can name.
You have the name first, and then you figure
exactly.
out what it's
you fill in the
about.
Content behind it. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right.
All
we
right,
got a couple
what are
other things.
Next?
All right. Edge is dead, but it was never alive. I saw something about
dead.
This, but I don't understand Vercel and even what they do. So you're going to have to give me the like 2 cent
version.
You know
who else doesn't understand Vercel is Vercel. They have no idea what they do. So sitting on our PHP throne, overlooking the vast wastelands of the rest of the developer ecosystem is a great place to be. It's just, you know.
Like
it's
Thanos
just great
up there.
To be right. I just love being right. And turns out we were right again. So, you know, Vercel has been pushing
doubted.
This thing. Never doubted. Vercel has been pushing this thing for a long time. And their great advantage turns out to be their Achilles heel also. They're great at marketing. They're great at hype. They're great at like naming things and coining phrases and like pushing stuff out there. To their credit, they did backtrack on this one particular thing when they found out it was technically infeasible, which we all knew it was going to be. Okay. So the Edge thing that they've been pushing is like, hey, you should put your app closer to your users. And you look at that and you're like, well, that's a pretty good idea. That sounds
that
really fast.
Sure.
Well, you know what? Your data is going to be far away from your app at that
point.
That
part's
so,
less good.
Yeah. And so they tried to push this like, push your app to the edge. So the edge means all things to all people. Right. And one thing it means is a physical location. And I think the physical location is good for a lot of things. For CDNs, the edge is great. For terminating expensive connections and then using a fat backhaul or something, that's great. That sounds awesome. For putting your actual app out there, that's insane. But the edge also means like a runtime. And it's like a watered down Node.js. It's like a V8 runtime or something
right,
like that.
Right.
And so you're working with this nerfed runtime and you're close to your users, but you're still so far away from your data. And so you're making these round trips behind the scenes, but like your user doesn't know that it's behind the scenes. It just still feels slow.
Yeah.
And so Vercel recently came out and was like, hey, that thing that we've been pushing, our bad. Like, we were wrong about that. So we're going to roll that back and you'll just go back to Node.js and keep your app close to your database. I'm like, what is happening?
So have they straight like canceled the product or they're just like recommending a different
path? No, I don't know if they've canceled the product because they still talk about it in terms of like ridiculous things. Like you can quickly stream back a shell of the application while the rest of the app. And I'm like, why are you
into all that stuff? It's like, no, for like 3 milliseconds saving.
Doing?
Maybe there's the occasional.
Fix your database queries and you'll get 400 milliseconds back. Right. Don't worry about the 3 milliseconds.
Maybe there's like logging things that you can do or like some type of just logic processing that can happen on the edge. Like there are use cases.
Edge middleware is interesting.
Things, right? Yeah, there's stuff you could do, but like if you have stuff that has a database, then yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it, see, Cloudflare obviously has a huge edge workers and all that stuff.
I knew you were going to sneak it in. I knew you were going to talk your book. Yeah.
D1, part of their thing is that they'll replicate the database close to the users. So like if like many of us, like if all your users are in the United States and 20% are in the UK and 10% are in Australia, like they're just going to replicate it to those places and then it's still fast and then great. Yep. Fine. But like, yeah, if you're just trying to have one database in New York and like,
yeah, if your database
edge locations,
is in US East 2 and your app is running in Australia, well, you still got to go all the way back to US East 2 to get the data.
The speed of light is a bummer.
So I don't think they canceled the product, like the offering. They're just saying don't use it in this way. So they're still talking about, you know, partial pre-rendering or whatever, it's streaming, whatever. I don't know. Right. I don't care. And, you know, edge middleware, which I think is interesting. You know, you can do stuff as the request comes in super fast or super close to the user. That's interesting. But yeah, Lee Robb came out and was like, hey, we're backtracking, and people just kind of like, oh, it didn't seem to go super great.
Perfect microcosm of all like JavaScript on the server, everything to me. Like the whole thing, it never makes any sense. It's always like, this is the future of everything and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be great. And then like, it's really not that great. And like, people are building stuff around it, but like, doesn't seem any better than you could have just done it in Ruby or PHP and like gotten there faster and better and safer and all that stuff. So I don't know, especially for like, I mostly hate it when I see the bootstrappers get sucked in on it because it's like, oh man, like you're just getting killed here. Like you could just start a new Laravel app so much easier without like this like multi-tier thing and all this stuff you got to keep in your head and all these layers and services and all this stuff.
All these SaaS services you're buying to run a cron job. You're like, guys, no.
And then you run like a non-profitable VC back company, at least like beyond Cloudflare, if you're gonna do like a edge worker thing, cause like they're not going anywhere. It's a public company, they're profitable, great. Yeah. Like you're doing all this stuff and like the thing you're on might just be out of business next week because they have 400 designers, but like I don't think, you know, eventually the money's gonna run out. Like the money has to run out at some point.
Yeah, the free plan might just go away. That's
possible.
The free plan
might go away, yes. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you can fight or you can win. This is not my fight to fight. It is sure as fun to observe from the outside.
That's the whole theme. It's the theme of the episode.
So the edge is dead. Long live the edge, but not in the way that you used to use it.
I mean, you can make these centralized apps so fast now. It's like computers are so fast. It's just like, I mean, if you're under 100 milliseconds, it's basically imperceptible. And especially with like LiveWire and, you know, Ruby has its variations of LiveWire type things. It's like you could just make it feel instantaneous. So like, you don't need to jump through all these hoops. Or even if you do like your regular view, you want to do a view front end with a regular back end, fine. Like, but yeah, you don't have to go crazy.
You don't have to go crazy.
Speaking of crazy,
tell me,
you posted a crazy ass tweet.
Crazy.
Crazy. That you and your wife
Have
the full location sharing 24/7,
24/7 baby,
big
That's
brother
right.
satellites around the earth tracking you. I don't know what's the
deal? I'm asking Big Brother. I'm like, Big Brother, where's Jennifer right now? Is she close to home? And Big Brother's like, yeah, she's close. You got to start cleaning everything up. And I'm like, shoot.
There used to be whole the movies about this of like people terrified by this, and people are just opting into this life. I don't know.
I know. We didn't go down with a scream. It was just a convenience. It was like, yeah, that seems great. I'll turn that on. I didn't have to be coerced at all.
Every second.
So you're anti. I'm anti. You're against.
Oh, well, I'm way against.
Whoa.
Maybe I'm too old school. Maybe it's the gray coming in here. But like,
yeah,
it's not even the like. I mean, yes, it's for privacy, but it's more just like it just feels like a lot. Like if I was like. If like my wife's somewhere
inconclusive, yeah.
And
tell me
I'm
more.
I'm calling that place. I'm like, is Jamie there? I'm calling around. Is Jamie there? People would be like, your husband.
You're an
a
insane
lunatic.
Person,
right?
Yeah.
You're an insane person.
I agree.
Why do you need
Good
to know
so
where
far.
Your wife
Same
is?
Page. Same
every
page so
second
far.
Of the day. Why are you tracking her every movement? And like, so it's the same thing, but I don't have to call anybody. But like, it's like, oh, where is she? Oh, I could just look it up. But where am I? Like. I don't know, I feel like there's like a
trust level
there.
I know where I am.
I know where I am
24/7. So that doesn't. I'm not gaining anything that way.
Where am I?
So let's look up Jennifer right now and find out where
boy.
She is.
Oh
that's
boy!
That's crazy. I actually do have my dad's location on. He's at home. Jennifer's at home. So like I know. I don't have to call anybody. I don't have to call the restaurant and be like, "Hey, is Jennifer there?" I just know she's at home.
Seems stressful
Listen,
too. Like a little
it's
stressful.
No. This is no. So here's All the right. take. Mm. I rarely ever check it. Like,
of course.
We're talking like once a week.
Not that rare, but
that's pretty rare. You're saying I'm looking at it 24/7. That's how many seconds are in a week and compare that to 86,000 yeah. something like that. So okay. one out of 86,000. That's mm-hmm. pretty rare. Mm-hmm. So rarely ever check it. Right now, I'm not going to church because the little babies are too young, right? So we can't go put them in childcare. It's still flu season or whatever. Pediatrician's like, don't do it. So I'm staying home Sunday morning with the little babies. She's taking the big kids to church. She still texts me on the way home from church. Hey, we're leaving. I'm going to get the kids right now. So it's not like I'm constantly checking, has she left church? She texts me, right. Hey, on our way home. Yeah. And I'm like, great. On our way home doesn't always mean on our way home when you have kids. Sure. Sometimes right. on our way home means I'm about to walk to the car and, you know, try to convince a child to put their seatbelt on.
We're going to make three stops on the way because you got to stop and get whatever.
Sunday, early afternoon, I'm in charge of making lunch by the time the big kids get home. Mm. It's helpful to know how many minutes do I have left, right?
This is like, crazy.
This is not crazy.
Lunacy.
Why is this crazy?
This is total lunacy.
No, this is great. This is wonderful. I'm putting the little babies down to sleep. I'm looking and I'm like, oh, she's actually moving. I got to go out and make some grilled cheese or something. And so it's like, that's super helpful. On the flip side, we're alternating going to Bible study once a week. We don't only just go to church and Bible study, but we do go to those things. So we're alternating. So Wednesday nights, one of us will go and one of us will stay home, right? Mm-hmm. I think that she just wants to know that I'm not dead. I think that's her main, like, it's not so much like how many minutes before he gets home. It's, is he dead in a ditch on the side of the road? And like, no, he's moving or he's still at Alex's house. And so it's fine. The two takes that came out from this tweet, great tweet, by the way, thought like, this is going to do numbies. And it sure did. Yeah. The two takes were one was big tech is tracking you. If you turn this on, and I'm like, my brother,
I don't really care about
big
that.
Big tech is always tracking you.
That doesn't bother
me. I'm carrying this GPS device in my pocket with me wherever I go.
Right.
So that doesn't move me. I'm unmoved by that. The other take is I trust my wife. And I'm like, what? Who was talking about trust at all? I'm saying it's easier to coordinate when you have kids, when you have this thing on. And people are like, wow, you know, even couples need privacy. And I'm like, sure, that's fine. I agree. But like my location is not that big of a deal for my wife to know. I'm like, come on, man. So
I guess I'm unmoved. So my take is a little subtler and I'm not even sure I could totally express it, but it's definitely not like, oh, you don't trust your wife or she doesn't trust, like that just inherently means that. Like that's definitely not my take. I do think you're in a little bit of a strange bubble right now where it's a little less real because like you have these tons of kids and they're all very small.
So many.
So you guys are not going anywhere. Like you're basically like,
that
right? You're home. Like
home
you're sometimes
going
between home and this work condo. and like, okay, and you have like the
condo,
the two places you go a week, right? Like, you don't have like a bunch of spots. You're not all over the place, right? But like, but someday you'll be more all over the place. And to me, then it gets, it's just a little, on the flip side, on one side, you could say, well, then it's even more valuable because like we're
all over the place
more.
Yeah.
On the other side, there is just a like,
I'm making deals. Who knows where I am?
Big brother, I'm just popping in on you any second, no matter what you're doing. How'd you like that place you had dinner that I haven't even mentioned to you yet? Like, I don't know. So it gets weird. It's a little weird.
I'm just dumbfounded that that situation could ever even happen. The fact that I could, go to a dinner and not tell her like beforehand, hey, I'm going to a dinner at this place with this person. Yeah. That just blows my mind. If like that would never happen.
Well, I mean, I bet you it's already happened. Like if you go to, you know, a conference and like, hey, afterwards, we're like, everybody's going over here for a drink or dinner or whatever. Like, you're not necessarily always going to be 100% of the time, like, here's where I am now, here's where I am now, here's where I am now. Like,
no, that's
like,
what the location is for.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, like, she'll be like, hey, how was that dinner? Or you to her, or whatever. Like, I think that I'm applying this both directions. Like,
that
I think
doesn't bother me. I'm 0% bothered if she's like, hey, how was like Chili's to go in the airport? And I'm like, that's great. Chili's to go was as good as it always is.
Oh, so, I'll be interested for the feedback. I mean, I guess you already have the feedback. I haven't read the feedback to your tweet, so we'll see what our listeners think about this. I'm a little bit curious, but
one of the most wild responses was like, "You're not keeping it interesting. She's gonna lose interest. Men are logical. Women are emotional, and you need to keep her on her toes." And I'm like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're like, I got four kids under three.
Yeah,
buddy.
I got four kids. We've been married 10 years. Like, I think we're gonna be okay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The final great use case for this is I always text her when I'm leaving the work condo. So it's people are like, oh, I like texting my wife. I'm like, that option is still available to you. You can still do that. I haven't taken that away from you. So I'll text her when I'm leaving. I'm like, hey, I'm on my way. When I turn the corner onto our street, there's this big bay window in the front of our rental house. The kids are waiting in the bay window, and I honk and they wave and I wave and I honk and I flash my lights. And it's like, yeah, that's super easy to coordinate. Like, oh, look, all right, he's on our street. Let's, hey, dad's home and it's fun. And like, that's great. I love that. There's nothing wrong with that. That is not a trust issue at all. That is a delight.
Yeah, to me, it's not exactly a trust issue. I wish I'd spent a little more time trying to articulate this in my head, because it's not exactly a trust issue. It's just more of like a, it could be too many 90s movies in my head, but it's more of like a creepiness, a like big brother constantly watching you, not even for nefarious purposes, like not even because I don't trust you, not even for anything like that. But it's just always there. It's always in the back of your mind. Somebody is literally tracking me right now all the
it's
time.
Not
like,
you forget about it immediately. No, nope.
It's a little weird.
No, nope. share your location with me and we'll see how it goes. we'll do a little sample run. It'll be fine. Be like, Ian, you're charging either. Your Rivian. What are you up to? You want to talk for a little bit? Yeah,
how's your tacos? Are they good there? How's your chipotle?
Insane. I heard, speaking of Chipotle, I heard that Chipotle has done 6 price increases since the pandemic. 6.
Huh. I guess there are a lot of food costs going up, you know?
That's crazy.
I feel like, though, for me, what I noticed the most is, like, I know people, the food costs, whatever. And I got a lot of kids, so I do get that part. But to me, the biggest increase in my expenditure of food, and I avoided
delivery.
This for years.
Gotta be
years.
Gotta
yes.
Be.
Like, I avoided DoorDash. I avoided it. I was like, I don't want to get in the mix on this. It's going to be a headache. It's going to be expensive. I don't want
to
deal with it.
You're paying $30 to get a bowl delivered to your house.
Freaking insane. Like, anytime I order anything, $30. I wish anything was there. It's all $200. Like, every time we get anything, it's $200. Because all my kids eat, like, adult.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's 5 adult meals, and then, you know, like, I'm tipping the guy and the fees and the thing. And
you've got the Uber fee, you've got the sometimes the restaurant fee, the tax, and like, the tip.
It's insane. Like,
it's crazy.
Literally $180, $160. Like, And I'm like, and then it's like, we're tired and we don't want to go out to dinner and drag everybody there. No wonder
you're putting your rebuild on hold. You got to make more money to afford the DoorDash. Jeez.
It's unbelievable. And you know what's annoying? That guy, founder of DoorDash, he often will play poker on one of these poker streams. And so once in a while I catch him on there and I'm like, this guy just there playing poker with my money.
God dang money.
Exactly. He's in this huge game with $1 million in front of him with my money.
Those got land. Those chips have landsmen written all over them.
Man. Yeah. But yeah, the DoorDash. It's like, okay, like, yeah, our costs went up 25% on this stuff, and that's a lot. But then the DoorDash fees and everything, it's double with the DoorDash.
Suspicious.
Fee.
Like, yeah.
So annoying. But
man, I almost feel bad for you that your food delivery has gotten expensive.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost.
Almost. Almost. Yeah.
My wife hates it. She is like, don't get DoorDash. We'll go pick it up or whatever. I'm like, sometimes you just got to do it. It's like, whatever, it's late, we're tired, everybody's like done. Like, let's just get some food over here.
You know, I got to say, I think the going to pick it up is the real dad hack, if I'm going to be honest.
That is the way to do it.
I love going to pick up food. Because
it's out of the house for a few minutes.
I'm going to get out of the house. I'm going to listen to like 8 minutes of a podcast.
I love
maybe,
that 8 minutes. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the restaurant and get a little margarita while I wait.
Oh,
maybe.
A little pregame. Yeah. You go
we'll
a little
see.
Early. Yeah.
Is the food not ready? Oh, what a shame. That's
too
bad.
I'll just sit right here.
Can I just sit at the bar? Is that okay? Wow. So I don't, you know, I really don't mind picking up food. I guess I have what's called a servant's heart that I like to go out and pick up the food. Yeah, that's what it is.
I got to bring that. We used to do that. It's been crazy. I got to put that back into the fold, I think. Go pick it up. Maybe pregame a little if you get there early, but either way, you get that 8 minutes of audiobook each direction
great.
Or whatever.
It's great.
Just a little something to reset you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's probably true.
Plus you come home and you're the hero. You're like, oh,
and
thanks
you
for getting food,
like
babe. And you're like, oh, you're
great.
Welcome. I did it all for you. It's great. So
it is annoying the restaurants that don't change the prices when you do pick up. Like some of them just leave the you know, because all the restaurants are also artificially increasing the price. Like the price is always like 30% more to cover the DoorDash's cut. So then if you just like were to call them and order it, and it's like, all right, but if I'm just doing it through here, I don't know, maybe DoorDash still charges them. I guess maybe they do. But some restaurants do change the price. So
we go direct to restaurant when we do pick up. We use their online ordering system.
Nowadays, most of them do have it. Since like post-COVID, like a lot more restaurants do have their own at least. So you can do that. Fairly reliably, but I don't know.
Tough times, man.
Yeah, man. All right, let's wrap it up there. I think that's a good spot. So thanks everybody. Check us out, mostlytechnical.com, mostlytechpod on Twitter. We got a lot of feedback things, so definitely hit us up there.
Mm-hmm.
And mostlytechnicalpodcast@gmail.com if you want to write in. Thanks to Laracast and Button Down. And we will see you next week. Thanks.
See ya.